Good evening. On this week's programme, the forgotten history of British and Irish white slaves in America. Also,
the Ireland of 1984, 30 years ago, very different to Ireland today.
The case of the Kerry babies. And in April 1916, Pádraig Pearse, Tomás McDonagh, Joseph Plunkett and Sean McDiarmida had a tense meeting to decide whether or not the Easter Rising would go ahead. We hear about the fifth man who was there that night. And that's where we begin.
When the tricolour was planted on the Dublin post office and when Pearse marched out to O'Connell Street to read the Declaration of Irish Independence to its citizens, the names of the gallant standard bearers in former generations flashed across our minds.
So recalled one of the key architects of the 1916 Rising, Dermot Lynch, during an address at Westminster Hotel in Boston 5 years later. He was aide-de-camp to James Connolly during Easter week and was the last man to leave the GPO as the rebels retreated. Yet the name Dermot Lynch will mean little to many people. Dermot Lynch was also the fifth man at that all-night session on the 22nd of April 1916, at which it was decided that the Easter Rising would go ahead. I'm joined by Eileen McGough from our Cork studio, who has delved into the life of this overlooked Irish patriot. Eileen, why is Dermot Lynch not well known like the other 1916 leaders?
Yes, Miles, it is a wonder that he's not well known. He was very well known in Ireland in 1917 when he was on the Sinn Féin Executive Council. And he was central to the 1916 Easter Rising as he was a member of the Supreme Council of the IRB.
Was he prominent enough, would you think, perhaps to have been executed in 1916?
Absolutely. In fact, he was condemned to death. But what saved his life, really, I think, was that it was late in May when he was recognised and court-martialed. And at that stage, there was furore around the world, indignation about the executions that had already gone ahead, plus the fact that Dermot was an American citizen. And protests were voiced in America. And also the American president, President Woodrow Wilson, made a personal appeal for his life to be spared by the British until America had investigated his case.
Now, you've got some really interesting photographs and letters belonging to Dermot Lynch, including one written on a brown paper bag. Tell me about that one.
That's right. Well, when they were held in Richmond barracks after the Rising, even soap and water wasn't available, so paper must have to write on to send messages out must have been non-existent. And one of his nieces has scraps of brown paper bag in her possession with Dermot's writing on several of them, requesting cigarettes and requesting clean underclothes. And also, very casually in one of them, he says, after putting in his request, he said, "Oh, by the way, you probably have heard my sentence to be shot."
Phlegmatic, how are you, on a brown paper bag.
Exactly.
By the way, that's all on our website, together with photographs of Dermot
Lynch. That's wonderful, thank
and
you.
And related documents. Now, he was arrested in 1918 for kidnapping two droves of pigs. Why was he kidnapping pigs?
That's right. I'll tell you, the Sinn Féin Executive Council appointed him as food controller. In effect, he was the first minister for agriculture the country had. At the same time, Michael Collins was the finance minister. Now, as food controller, Dermot was raging about the exporting of food to Britain to feed the British army, who were still at war. And he put letters in the papers and he wrote indignant letters to the authorities about grain and bacon being exported. And in February of 1918, he took his campaign a stage further, and he and some other Sinn Féin volunteers, they kidnapped the two droves of pigs being driven down the North Circular Road to be sent out from
I
the North Wall.
Pignapped would be more appropriate.
Exactly. And they took them, it was all organised, they took them to a corporation yard where they were slaughtered. The butchers were ready to do the job. And the meat was sold to the local people. And the owners of the pigs were recompensed by Sinn Féin. And of course, this created a huge publicity glare around the world. And also, it was viewed very indignantly by the British because it was defiance of authority of Britain. So that's why he was arrested and put into, first of all, Mountjoy and then into Dundalk prison.
And he got married while he was in prison. How
did
he manage that?
He did. I'll tell you, he applied. He knew he was going to be deported. They wanted to get rid of him, and he was an American citizen. So the solution to the problem of Dermot Lynch was to get him back to America.
I'm sure they would have loved to deport everybody to America, but they weren't all American citizens.
Exactly. So he applied to the governor for parole to get married. That was refused. He applied to get married in the prison. That was refused. So therefore, he went secretly and made arrangements. And Father Aloysius Travers, who was one of the Capuchins who had attended to the leaders of the rising before they were executed, he and Dermot's fiancée, Kathleen Quinn, and Kathleen Quinn's sister, Carmel, they came on an organised visit, and they had requested to see Dermot and Michael Brennan of Clare and Frank Henderson. And in the visitor's room, the Capuchin drew the two engaged people aside, and the warden was standing with his back to the door. And Frank Henderson's orders, according to his own account, was if the warden tried to draw attention to what was happening, he was to stop him physically. But anyway, the Capuchin married them in a few words, and they were married in the visiting room of Dundalk Jail on the exact date and at the exact time at 12 noon of the 1916 rising.
OK, now let's get on to the bit where he essentially falls out. He wasn't the only one, as I said, falls out with De Valera, because he's deported to the States and he becomes one of the main organisers of a very important organisation called the Friends of Irish Freedom, which
That's
involved
right.
The great John Devoy and also Justice Daniel Coughlan, two That's great Irish Americans. Tell me about the Friends of Irish Freedom and how they fell foul of Eamon De Valera, or he fell foul okay. of them, depending on your point of view.
Well, it's a great tragedy, and you know, it was a disastrous split. I mean, Dermot was elected when he got to America in 1918. He was unanimously elected as the national secretary for the organisation, which was in very kind of mediocre shape. In September of 1918, he reported that there was only $400 in the kitty. Now, after a year and a half, he had swollen the membership. Through his efforts, the membership from about 4,000 to something like 50,000 membership. And they had also organised for a fund to be set up, which was called the Victory Fund. And the money was coming in from that. And the organisation was very powerful. Now, my case would be that these Irish Americans who had lived a long time in America, in fact, Daniel Coughlan was born there, they knew how to work the political system. They knew how to be effective in the American context. And Mr. De Valera and Harry Boland and others arrived, and they would not listen to counsel or advice. They very, very quickly began to differ with the advice given to them by the Friends of Irish Freedom and to forge their own path. And it escalated. And of course, John Devoy was an outspoken man, and he let loose in the pages of his newspaper, The Gaelic American. So the whole thing escalated and deteriorated badly, even though the Friends paid all of De Valera's bills while he was in America, which was $26,000, which in today's money would be huge. And also the Friends of Irish Freedom loaned $100,000 to the campaign that De Valera came out to establish.
And I know that Coughlan and Devoy wanted a certain amount of that money at least to be spent on pro-Irish activities, as it were, in America. But when he was in the States in 1918, he was elected in 1918 as TD for the constituency of Cork South Central, as it's now known. It'd be Simon Coveney's constituency.
Absolutely,
now.
Yes.
He resigned that seat in July of 1920. Was that because of the dispute with De Valera?
Yes. Well, initially when he was elected, I mean, he was very happy to be elected, but he felt very conscious that he was not on the ground to do the work of a TD, you know, that he was in America. But then when the trouble arose and got very bitter and attacks began to appear in the American papers and in the Irish papers against Devoy and against the Friends of Irish Freedom, against Dermot Lynch, the last straw was that public letters being sent home by Harry Boland and Sean Noonan and others who were in America with De Valera were seized at Southampton docks and published in newspapers, and these castigated the Friends of Irish Freedom. So Dermot just felt that it was time to go, you know.
After returning to Ireland in 1932, Dermot Lynch made a huge contribution to historical records. For instance, in his book, The IRB and the 1916 Insurrection.
Yes.
Now, Eileen, he was the first person to record witness statements from those of the GPO garrison who were still alive. He'd come back to Ireland in the meantime in 1932.
That's right. Once there was a gathering of the veterans of 1916 in Dublin in 1935 first, and again in 1936, he began to gather their statements from those survivors of the GPO garrison. And in fact, others gave him statements too from other hotspots in the city during the rising. And each time they met in Dublin, Dermot edited and corrected and checked facts. And those first witness statements collected in 1936 and 37 are in the National Library. And to me, they have an immediacy and they have a rawness and a relevance that, you know, somehow the official witness statements, the big booklet that was sent out 10 years later by trained interviewers, I just feel that the first witness statements are much more compelling.
Yeah, but he to some extent, he prefigures the Bureau of Military History.
He
now,
did,
no
indeed.
Public monument, no road, street, no public building dedicated to his memory. He died in 1950, even though he was one of the inner circle of IRB men who engineered the Easter Rising.
Yes.
But there's a commemorative plaque in the garden of the house where he was born.
Yes, fortunately the Lynch family are still in possession of that house, and the Cork Commemorative Association in 1966, to mark the anniversary of the Rising, they unveiled a bronze plaque in the garden of that house, and it was Dennis McCullough, his old comrade in the Supreme Council, who unveiled it.
Eileen McGough, many thanks indeed for joining me. Eileen's
You're very
book,
welcome indeed.
Your book, Dermot Lynch, Forgotten Irish Patriot, is published by Mercia Press as part of its Irish Revolutionaries series. We put a selection of documents on our website, including his original charge sheet, 1936 witness statements and marriage certificate, and photos of Dermot and Kathleen as well.